Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants! Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast about some team that we're not going to mention. It's just a baseball podcast, just random baseball podcast, has no affiliation with any team whatsoever. My name is Willie Dills. This is episode 61, the Levon Hernandez episode, and I'm joined by Mr. Chad King. Chad, welcome to the show.
I think we got to start podcasting about Little League Giants.
Yeah, yeah. This is a podcast about the little Giants, the littlest Giants. What do they call it? What's the charity? Like every time you like bring your glove to the ballpark,
Junior Giants.
Junior Giants. That's the one. Yep. Yeah, we're definitely not affiliated with a single team in MLB.
Absolutely not.
Just so you know, leave us in iTunes.
We're just going to talk about guys with similar names, if not the same. But that's total coincidence.
It's a random baseball team. We just happen to like to talk about Buster Posey a lot. It's just, you know, I don't know how much we want to get into it, but we'll just leave it as some bad things are happening right now. And hopefully we can avoid, hopefully we can stay with you guys. And if what I think is possible may happen, trust me, we will continue to do the show and you guys can find us in other ways.
Oh, absolutely.
Besides, iTunes. So, yeah. Anyway,
it's not the only outlet.
I don't want to like, you know, put too much emphasis on what's going on. If you're confused about what I'm talking about, just Google some stuff, figure it out. You'll find out. But I gotta give big ups to Thomas and Danny. Feel bad for them right now. Feel real bad for them. Our sister podcast. We're the brother podcast. They're the sister podcast. Feel bad for those guys, and any support that they need from us, we will be glad to give in these trying times. Anyway, let's talk about some baseball.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks, man.
It has been. It has been a little while.
We take a break and they go on a tear.
Like, I know, right? We don't have Ben Lee with us, by the way, which is unfortunate, but he normally doesn't have to work late on Mondays, but tonight he unfortunately had to close. So, Ben, we'll do our best in your absence, but the Giants happen to be tied for the best record in the National League, and that is not a new development. We've been at the top or near the top of the standings in not just the NL West, but just in baseball for quite a while now, it feels like. I mean, we're a third of the way into May now, and you can officially talk about what this team really looks like. So, Chad, I pose the question to you. Is this team the real deal? Is this a team that can challenge for the best record in the majors?
You know, a lot of analysts always point to they can't really assess anything from a team until about a quarter of the way into the season. We're just about there. We're just about 40
games
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, even if they lose a couple of games, they're going to have a winning record and probably be close to, if not at first base anyway. I do. I mean, catastrophic injury, you know, Angel Pagan, those kind of things, and we can talk about Belt later. I think that this team has surprised a lot of people, and it's funny, two World Series championships in the last 4 years, and yet we're still surprised.
We're still surprising people.
I don't know why that is, but even...
It's because, you know, both of those World Series teams were not the favorites in either case, and it was like the scrappy Giants like somehow find a way through, and the team has largely, at the core, stayed together, so... Yeah. You know, when you don't bring in, like, we haven't added some massive bat, you know, Buster Posey was the last big bat that was added to this team. And that was in 2010, halfway through the season. So, you know, Morris doesn't count as like a huge signing in free agency. So, this team still kind of feels like the underdogs in a lot of respects, especially when you have the Dodgers in the same division as you. So, by the way, the Dodgers are, in third place right now. which this feels about right. It's how it's supposed to be. They're supposed to be scuffling right around 500, and that's where they are.
They're supposed to be. That's exactly where they're supposed to be. Here's the thing, though. Right now, the Giants are sitting at 10 games above 500, right? 24-14. So we know how horrible of a season was last year. And Angel Pagan went down, I think May 25th was the date last year. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, I mean, the Giants were on a roll before Angel Pagan. And I just looked it up. So they've played 38 games. They're playing the 39th tonight. So yeah, we're just about at the quarter mark. And by the way, they are up 4-1 in the seventh. So
with runners on base and only one out, right?
Yeah, we're not going to assume a victory tonight yet, but let's just put it this way. 10 games above 500, 24-14. After 38 games last year, they were 23-15.
Wow.
So they were only only one game worse than they are right now last year, and they finished 10 games under 500. So there's a lot of baseball left. We have no idea what the heck's going to happen. The Dodgers went on that incredible 42-8 run. But again, I just don't think that maybe a Pagan type injury, because I don't think Belt is the same catalyst that Angel Pagan is. And so I don't, and like you said, you have Michael Moore. So
yeah, we're going to talk about this actually when we, when we get to the next segment here. But, an injury like Pagan, if he were to be the one to go down again, we could go down that same road. Or if it's a Buster Posey, or if it's like, say, a Matt Cain or a Madison Bumgarner, like I could definitely see the impact being severe. Well, let's just get into it. Belt goes down for 6 weeks, broken finger, and he's going to be out for 6 weeks. It's a thumb, correct? Broken left thumb. So as a left-handed hitter, that's his top hand, and you can get away with it still being a little sore, but it's a broken finger, and he's also got a throw with that hand, so it's not a good injury for a major league ball player to have, for sure.
Yeah, anything with the digits is tough.
Yeah, but these guys are tough, and they tend to be able to play through. I mean, Scudero tried for a lot of last season to play through, what was it, like stump finger or some weird thing? Like
mallet finger.
Mallet finger, yeah. That's the one, yeah. So these guys often try to play through stuff like this. But
he's got like mallet back or something.
But Brandon Belt is... it's expected he'll be gone for at least 6 weeks, and if you're gonna lose, a player, you definitely don't want to lose him when he's leading the team in home runs, when he's the hottest hitter on the team in a lot of respects, and he's cooled off considerably from his ridiculous start, but he's still,
he's still
having an amazing season.
Yeah. 264, 18 ribbies, nine home runs.
And, you got Morris at 8 and you got Posey at 7 and Hicks at 7.
And Hicks at 7, I know.
He's one of the big sluggers on this team of sudden slugging. I don't know. It's weird. But, losing him is definitely a blow. Not necessarily because we can't plug someone in at first base, but because we then lose the person we plug in another location on the field. So,
yeah, you move Morse to first base, and that's what they're doing tonight, and that's probably what they're going to do for the majority of his absence.
Yeah.
But then you get Tyler Colvin, of course, who's having a heck of a game tonight.
Yeah.
So this game, barring, it's going to be him and Blanco.
You're going to see Blanco, and you're going to see Perez over there sometimes, I believe. But,
well, Perez was just sent down today.
Yeah, but I think he'll be back up. I think it's going to be like a little bouncing back and forth for this 6 weeks. I mean, 6 weeks is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly you're going to be seeing Blanco over there, so there's a couple things this does. First of all, and obviously also sometimes you're going to see Posey play first base and Morris back in left field.
Right.
But there's a couple things this does. First, this makes... this makes our defense in left field better. It doesn't really lose any power out of the first base slot as far as like who's playing first base, but suddenly you've got Blanco in the lineup, meaning you're putting Hicks rather than being the 8 hitter. He's going to be like the 7 hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Blanco's hitting 8. So it definitely shifts things around a little bit. But I got to say, compared to losing, your star center fielder, who's the catalyst of the team, your leadoff hitter, who also has power and can drive in runs, you lose somebody like Belt and you're able to plug in somebody like Morse, Posey, and, all you really have to do is find someone to spell in left field for these 6 weeks is really where, like, we didn't really lose first base. We lost left field. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this impacts the team. nearly the same way that a Pagan injury did.
No, I think that's a great point that you bring up, because last year, you know, left field spot got five home runs the entire year, and we already have Michael Morse already at eight. So, I mean, if we have Blanco and Colvin hitting left field, it's going to be the same as last year. We're still going to have a power hitting first baseman. So, as long as we still have Pagan in the lineup, it's the same lineup as last year, and that's okay. As long as their pitching holds true, well, this team's going to be fine in Belt's absence.
It's the same lineup, you know, with a little more power from second base. And I think, you know, a better hitter than last year in Crawford. Like, I think he's improved. I think he's going to continue to improve. He's right around the pace that he was last year right now, but I still feel like he's a more reliable hitter than he ever has been. And again, it's not losing Pagan. So that was the real issue, is when you had to stick Blanco in center field, it just was a huge downgrade. So when you don't have to downgrade first base so much, it's fine. And I think the defense that we don't lose in left field will somewhat make up for it, because Morse, love the guy, great hitter, gets terrible jumps and doesn't have the speed to make up for it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to save some runs. You know, not granted, it's not the same as, you know, center field, but we're going to save some runs over the long haul, over 6 weeks, by having a better defender out there in left field. I don't know much about Colvin as a defender, but
I don't either. I don't. Yeah, but I know has a lot of pop
can't
at Fresno.
Worse. Yeah,
I don't think
be worse.
So. No. You know, it's really funny, because we always talk about the whole even odd year thing. 2010, they win the world championship. 2011, Buster Posey goes down, major injury, totally affected the season. They finish under 500. Actually, no, they were slightly over 500. Sorry, but
yeah, they were
missed
over
the playoffs still.
Yeah.
But everybody knows that Buster Posey, if he was healthy the entire year, they probably would have made the playoffs that year. 2012, everyone's healthy. Boom, they win the World Series again. 2013, Pagan goes down for the better part of half a year. And after he goes down, they just flail miserably. Run production's cut, defense is cut, speed's cut, the whole thing. Here we are in 2014, everyone's talking about World Championship. But again, Belt goes down. I don't think it's going to be as major of an injury like we just talked about. It's 6 weeks. It's not as long as the Pagan injury. So again, if everything holds true to the even odd year thing, as long as no one else major goes down, I think the Giants are, you know, heading in the right direction. I think everything's going to end up just fine.
It's a storm we can weather, is what it is. So you know, obviously we're going to get a nice boost when Belt comes back, and there's a couple things too. It's a thumb injury, which means he can still stay in shape. It's not like, you know, he's got a leg injury and he's like kind of hobbled. Right. He'll be able to stay in shape while he's on the DL. And so when he comes back, he'll actually be fairly fresh, you know. And the real hindrance to him is going to be not seeing live pitching for 6 weeks. But, you know, I have full confidence that Belt is now, at this point in his career, you know, he's a little bit a slight veteran, been around a little bit now, and he's a big league hitter, so he's going to be fine when he comes back.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not going to say that the injury is a good thing for the Giants. Obviously, it's not. But
he has
absolutely been cold lately. I know he hit a home run, you know, a couple of days ago. It was his first home run in a couple of weeks. But, man, his strikeouts had been piling up. And a lot of the Belt haters were coming out once again, which, of course, you know, I completely don't agree with. But I don't know. Maybe if you're going to have a, you know, an injury like this, have it happen when you're cold.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
When you're hot.
Exactly.
Because they're not, you know, right now they're not missing as bad over the last couple of games. I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, they're going to be fine. So let's talk about what we went through in the last week. So had a bad series in Pittsburgh, which was kind of a surprise at the time, because, I mean, I think Pittsburgh's a good team. I'm not going to say, like, Pittsburgh's a team we're supposed to walk over. But losing two out of three there. But then we come back and we take three out of four from the Dodgers in L.A., which is huge. You know, we go into their park and it's a four game series. Mm-hmm. And Kershaw comes back off the DL and we're able to beat him. We're able to beat Greinke, right? And who else did we beat? I can't remember who the other pitcher we beat, but
yeah, I think Mulholland was the only one that he didn't win,
but that's the game we lost. But we took down some of the better starting pitchers for the Dodgers, and those were some really, really good games. And the Giants looked like they were, like, to me, it felt like the Giants were the dominant team in that series. Like,
well, and Kershaw would have gotten the loss if it wasn't for Romo's blown save. So
that's true. Yeah, actually, and if you think about that whole thing too, there was a situation where the Giants got another an extra run in the ninth with the wild pitch, correct?
And, yeah.
And the walk, it would have been a walk-off for Hanley Ramirez.
It proved big. I mean, God, Hanram has absolutely tortured Romo, though. I think that's his third or fourth home run off of him.
It's one of those weird things because he doesn't – like, Romo doesn't seem to have a lot of bad matchups, but that guy, for whatever reason, just has his number. He's like
Lincecum and Goldschmidt or something.
It's not quite like that. But
okay, maybe not quite. I think Goldschmidt like has about 40 home runs off of Lincecum. Speaking of Lincecum, like by the way, tonight, I know the game's going to be over by the time this podcast is over, but he's allowed one hit tonight, and they're in the eighth inning.
And how many strikeouts did he have? Like
10.
10? Okay, he's got 10 strikeouts.
Yeah, he's only allowed a solo shot to Upton, which it sucks. I mean, it could have been another night for history if it wasn't for that one mistake pitch. But
he just got his 11 strikeouts, so there you go.
Up and down. Oh, yeah, and he started his at-bat 3-0, by the way.
Yeah.
On Ugla. Oh, yeah, Ugla. Or he didn't like that
one. That's not Ugla.
That's not Ugla.
Yeah.
He's ugly.
He had the Ugla body.
Okay, speaking of the last week, though, even though it was before this week, they started the 10-game road trip with a 3-game sweep in Atlanta.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
So what was amazing about this road trip is a lot of the Giants players and coaches and analysts were pointing to this 10-game roadie as probably the toughest and most critical of all of the road trips the entire year because they were going to face three teams, all of them being playoff teams from last year.
Yep.
So they said this is going to be a true test on the road against tough playoff teams. And what do? They go 7-3 on the road trip.
It's
7-3. I mean, they would have been happy at 5-5 or even 4-6. You know, tread water. But they went 7-3, and they could have been 8-2.
No, they built the lead on this road trip, and that's something that's really. I mean, you're going to look back at the end of the year, and if the Giants make the playoffs and do well in the playoffs, you're going to look at this road trip as a big one and a big turning point.
Well, they're 5 games above 500, both on the road and at home. No other team in Major League Baseball has done that.
That is crazy. And the Giants are definitely a team that have always played well at home, like with 1 year of a lapse, I think. But in general, the Giants have played well at home just because, you know, that park is very different than most parks. And when you get to play there most of the time and you get to learn the ins and outs of that, you know, it helps. So
and what's
the
even...
Giants.
Oh, go ahead.
And also most of the time the Giants have been built as a pitching club. So this year, one reason I think that we might be a better road team this year is we do have pop. We can match you home run for home run in some of these smaller ballparks like Pittsburgh, you know? So I think the Giants are built as a better road team this year.
Well, I think they're number two in the NL in home runs this year. And that just doesn't even sound right.
It doesn't. No.
It does not even sound right.
I still don't think that's where we're going to end up, but
no,
whatever. We're there now. No. It's fine. We'll stick with it.
Yeah. But only trailing Colorado, which that's never going to, that's an anomaly. Let's just throw the Rockies out.
Yeah, exactly. So the Giants are first.
So the Giants are first.
Yeah. So let's talk about something else that's we're talking about all these great things about the Giants season right now, right? You know, being tied for the best record in the NL, all that stuff. This is something that Giants fans, it's like surprising when you go on to any major sports publications website and they're giving the Giants props. It's just crazy. But the Fox Sports MLB power rankings, Giants are number one.
Yeah, what? I don't know if it's a curse. Some people were a little freaked out about that. But in fact, the Giants and A's are 1-2, respectively.
That is insane.
And clearly, you know, it may not last the entire season. Those things move all the time. But, I mean, the Fox Sports power rankings, there's 15 writers, so it's not like some analytical black box algorithm or whatever. So at least there are some good baseball minds in this country that are actually recognizing the fact that the Giants are playing really, really good baseball right now. And I know we always talk about East Coast bias, but here's at least one account where we could say, okay, you know, maybe the cream is rising to the top here and people are recognizing it. So it doesn't mean anything. It's there's no rings associated with it. There's no
stickers, you don't
money,
win anything for that.
Nothing.
But, but still, it's a cool little accolade. And I mean, you look at the teams where you know we're above, and you're talking about like the A's being in second. Okay, I mean, sure, the A's are in first place and doing really well, so it makes sense. But you know, like the Tigers, who have quite a good baseball team over there, the Brewers, who were insanely hot at the beginning of the year, Rockies is like what? and then you got the Dodgers all the way down there in seven. So, yeah, it's kind of nice. It is weird, though, when you look at all of Major League Baseball right now, how many teams are hovering around 500 that you were kind of expecting a little more out of, you know? Some teams, like, you know, are literally, like, at 500, and you're like, I thought this was a good baseball team. Like, the Angels, you know, the Braves are having a decent season, but the Red Sox are hovering around there. Yankees are hovering around 500. It's a lot of teams that are just not getting it going yet. So when you look at the whole of Major League Baseball right now, the Giants have to be up there at the top, and good to see them up there. So I'm happy for one. I'm not going to look at it as any kind of curse or anything.
No,
what are the cover of Sports Illustrated. So
yeah, it's not that kind of curse. But one of the biggest things that these guys are pointing to is the Giants bullpen. It's incredible. I mean, I know it's been incredible, but just looking up the stats, it's jaw-dropping how good the pen has been. First of all, Giants have 24 wins. The pen has 12 of them, half of the wins.
Yeah, Machi has what, five?
Five. In fact, yeah, he was at one point he was actually tied for the NL lead in wins last week when he got his fifth, which is pretty funny.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
He's on pace for like 18 wins this year.
Yeah, he's going to have 18 wins. Sure,
well, actually, no, 20. We're not at the quarter point, right?
Yeah, not even at the quarter point. So
he's on pace for 20,
man.
20
Cy game Young, winner.
Gene Machi. Yep. Here we go. Hashtag Machi Cy Young. Here we
0.49 ERA. And you know what? His stuff has looked like someone who's got a 0.49 ERA. I mean, he's been lights out, man. It's fun to watch him pitch right now.
Yeah, I mean, they got a 2.10 ERA, a 2.10 batting average against. Both of them lead the major leagues. And what's also incredible is that article that I retweeted from the TortureCast account earlier today about that article that Fox Sports also wrote, which included the power rankings. But they were talking about just how good Brian Sabian and Bruce Bochy have been over the last 4 years, managing not only the team on the field, but signing the guys that incorporate into the bullpen. A lot of teams just kind of, you know, it's a lot of rental parts, a lot of, it's on the heap. Oh, there's a former Cy Young Award winner here. Here's a guy who's 38 years old here's a guy from AAA or whatever. And bullpens don't seem to work out that well for most teams. The Giants seem to have some sort of science. Maybe it's more of an art, really, to this, because there, it almost seems like there's some intangibles that they're able to identify that maybe other teams can't, because they were pointing out how every year the bullpen's actually not been very consistent in terms of who's on the roster, aside from Romo, Lopez, Affelt.
Yeah, Affelt, Romo, and Lopez, and, you know, for a while it was Brian Wilson, but, you know, it's
those
true.
Guys are the mainstay, but the rest of them, I mean, right
well,
now...
Well, Casilla's been here
I guess he's been here for a while, but they were talking about how five members of their bullpen right now were minor league signings.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, no other team in Major League Baseball, you look at their bullpen roster and see that five of them were minor league signings.
No, and the amazing thing too is that you know, like, you made a good point about bullpens generally are kind of filled with these kind of I wanted to be a starter, didn't work out, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not stars out of the bullpen. But one of the amazing things the Giants have done is made stars out of their bullpen pitchers. There's a lot of guys, like, you know, I mean, Affelt, Lopez, Casilla, Romo, especially Romo has become just one of the biggest names in San Francisco as far as baseball players go, because he's just so consistent, and we utilize these guys really well. And they become integral parts of this team, whereas on a lot of teams, the bullpen guys are just like, whatever, okay, who's that guy? He sucks. Who's this guy? Well, he's good. But nobody really gives a crap about them on most teams.
No.
And our team has found a way to make these guys stars on the team, you know? I mean, Romo is a star. We all wait for El Michon to play, you know? We look forward to that. So it's cool. It's really cool. And it's definitely a strength of this team. And it sets us apart. And I think that the Giants might be proven to the rest of baseball how important this factor is in the modern game. So good on Sabian for sure. And Bochy is definitely one of the best managers at managing a bullpen. He's not afraid to run through seven or eight guys a night. And it happens a lot.
There's been a couple of games this year already. They've already played at least five or six extra inning games, which is an extraordinary amount, you know, 40 games into the season.
Yeah.
It's like almost a quarter of their games have gone into extra innings, or something like 18%. Anyway, I've seen a couple of games where he's burned through that bullpen going into the ninth or 10th.
No, and you're thinking, and you get yourself, a little worried, yeah.
Well, who, I mean, you know, is Michael Morse going to be pitching the 14th inning? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, now with no belt, clearly it's got to be Morse.
That's right, with no belt. Yeah, he really wants to pitch. But I think you bring up a good point there. He's not afraid to pull the trigger.
No.
He doesn't exhaust guys too much going, well, I got to conserve these guys. He just goes for the throat. He's just like, no, this is the situation. This is what it calls for.
So he makes the move based on the current situation. And he managed the situation a few years ago where we didn't have a solidified closer. Mm-hmm. He managed that better than I think any manager could have. You know, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, Bochy was the closer. You know, I mean, he was just like, I'm going to find the right guy for this. We need to get these three outs, and that's all that matters. Doesn't matter how I get them or who I put in to get those three outs. We got to get these three outs. And, you know, he was kind of the guy who orchestrated that and made it so that we didn't really feel the sting of losing Wilson nearly as bad as we probably should have, you know, as a team that went on to win the World Series. So it's a really cool thing that for this many years, the Giants have been able to do that. But they've also recognized the guys that need to stay. You know, they gave the contracts to Lopez, to Affelt. They kept, you know, Romo around, and Casilla's been here for a while. So, they, you know, as an organization, they've recognized how to manage that as well, not just Bochy. All right, let's move on to the big question. I think this was the big question going into the season, and it's become a bigger question as the season has gone on, and that is Pablo Sandoval. He's just – the slump has now reached epic proportions. The guy is batting under 200 now, a quarter of the way into the season. It's not like he's not getting that at bats. It's not like he's been hurt or something. I mean, he's 132 at bats. He's like second or third on the team right now, as far as times to the plate. So this is worrisome. Only two home runs, only eight RBIs. The guy's been batting in the heart of the lineup for most of the season. Is he playing? Okay, so my question is he playing his way out of SF, or is he actually playing his way in a weird way back into SF at a very cheap rate?
I totally agree with you, man. I mean, it's the funniest thing. You and I, and to some extent Ben, but we were just hardcore in the preseason podcast. You got to re-sign this guy. Even if it's, you know, 16, 17, 18 mil a year, pence money. He brings all those intangibles. Look what he's done for you in the World Series. He covers the plate well.
World Series.
You know, who else are they going to have at third base? They don't have anyone in the pipeline. They're not going to go out and sign Chase Headley or these other guys in the offseason who are going to command just about as much money anyway. So they got to re-sign him. And here we go. We're a quarter of the way into the season. He's hitting .191.
Yep.
.191. And that is, you can't find too many stars. He's not a perennial MVP or a perennial all-star, but he's an above average player. You don't find too many above average players hitting under 200 this far into the season. It just doesn't happen that often.
No, and he was hitting really poorly early on, and so was Pence. So it was kind of like, all right, well, these two guys are just having slow starts. Well, Pence is up to 257.
Yep.
Pablo has not gotten up the Schneid yet. So no, you know, he's sitting down there with Arias and Adrianza right now.
Even Posey was down at 240 in the last game that you and I attended a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He's back up over 300 now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean,
it's time to start worrying about this. Absolutely. There's one part of me that says Pablo's not going to hit under 200 the entire season, and I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
Sure that's accurate too.
Yeah. It's just, you know, how do you really go as a player as good as Pablo, a hitter as good as Pablo, and not, you know, fine. He's going to get hot at some point.
I still think he's going to wind up around 250, 260.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that his ceiling now is much lower. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to get to like a 300, 320, which is what he was, I'm sure, hoping to do this year.
Oh, I'm sure he was shooting for 20 bombs, 80, 90 ribbies, and around 290, 300. And what's so funny about this is that classic situation where you have the walk year where so many players seem to do well. Although I did read an article a couple of weeks ago where someone actually went through and analyzed all of the basically above average players that were going to command a lot of money in their free agent years. And we all kind of assume, oh yeah, they always seem
to do well, right? Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. It actually pretty much averages out. There are definitely players that have standout years in their walk years, but there's plenty of players that don't. You just don't hear about them. They don't rise to the top. But
it's like the sophomore slump. I mean, like you can say that all you want, but most players do fine their second year. It's not a big deal. So,
but you know, I do think that you're right in this case where if he continues this, and even if he ends up at 250 and with 10 home runs, because he's at 2 right now, so 10 mm-hmm. might even be. I mean, he should end up at 10 or more, but
he's not going to get 15.
Yeah, he's still not going to get, you know, $18 million a year from someone. Not even the Dodgers or the Yankees. I really don't think so.
No, he's not going to command a big salary based on this performance unless he really turns it around. And if here's the one thing, though, if he gets incredibly hot at the end of the year and, you know, performs out of his mind in the playoffs, there will be teams that go, all right, whatever. The beginning of the year he was slumping. We see the potential. We'll still sign him. But if he, you know, if he ends up somewhere around average as far as third baseman in the major leagues go, I think the Giants will be able to get him for a bargain. I don't think a lot of teams will come looking. So it could be that because of his performance this year, we actually do keep Pablo, even though people are like, ah. But if the money is less than it's not Pence money, then I don't think we'll see a big uproar out of Giants fans, because he does have the history and he's a, you know, all-star player, World Series MVP. These are big accolades. And I mean, Lincecum has somehow found his way out of this issue of like the Giants fans being so forgetful of the great things. Like Lincecum has just like skated through terrible years, still being a rock star in San Francisco. It's crazy.
He's untouchable.
Yeah, he is. He absolutely is. In San Francisco, he can do no wrong.
He's had two pretty mediocre or even below mediocre
years. He was the worst pitcher in baseball, basically, for 1 year.
And
he's
no one cares. They're just like, no, whatever.
I love that guy. It's Timmy night, dude. Timmy smoke. Timmy night at the ballpark.
Happy Lincecum Day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all that.
Yeah. No, it's true.
But,
it's
you know, funny. He's you know, Pablo may have been able to get 18 mil from the Giants if we were Brian Sabian. And maybe if he had a good year, he would have gotten 18 mil or 20 mil from the Dodgers or the Yankees. It's kind of funny in a sport like this, or maybe in, you know, extreme finance with people making millions of dollars a year. And they're like, oh, man, I could have made an extra $5 million this year if I had pulled that trade earlier, you know, on the stock market. Only in a world like this do we go, oh, man, I can't believe it. Instead of 18 mil, he might only get 13 mil now. Pff, boy, the guy really blew it. He's robbing himself of 5 million with his poor performance.
Yeah. It's
you know, I'd like to have that problem.
Professional sports is crazy. Well, let's move on to armchair manager, because we're going to stick with Pablo here. But if we get through June and Pablo is still not over the Mendoza line, how do you play it as Bruce Bochy? I mean, do we end up with another 2010 type of situation where the guy basically plays himself out of the everyday lineup?
Yeah.
And if so, who the hell do you put there?
That's the thing. They don't have anyone else. So I just don't see how they're going to put anyone else at third base at this point. I mean, he's their best option.
Arias would be the only guy I could see.
But if he was hot,
But if Arias is batting, I mean, he's batting 164. Yeah. So it's not going to be
no justification for Arias. None whatsoever.
Plus, did you watch him play first base the other night? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, wow, a lefty just hit a bomb into the bay off of Lopez. Yeah. That's
a lefty
unusual.
Off of Lopez. That's crazy.
Damn.
He got all of that. I think that we are just in a situation here where this season is not like 2010, because in 2010 we had Uribe.
Mm-hmm.
So Uribe moved over there and was adequate and also was incredibly hot for a certain portion of that season. But we don't have an Uribe. We don't have somebody like that. If Arias gets incredibly hot at some point, maybe he becomes that type of player for the Giants. But I think we just see Pablo play third base all year, no matter what. No matter what his average is going into June, going into July, I just don't see, unless a move gets made or something, we could trade him away or something. But I don't know.
The only thing on the radar I could even possibly see, and this is an extremely slim possibility because we haven't even brought up his name, is if Marco Scudero somehow, you know, heals miraculously and can make it back in the next month or so, which no one anticipates.
He's on the 60-day DL, so that's not going to happen.
That's right. He was placed on the 60-day. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so he's 2 months away at best.
So that's a moot point. Yeah. But I was going to say, if he were to come back, he could put Hicks at third. Yeah, but you're right. No, he's 60-day DL, so that's out of the question. So, yeah, I mean, there's really no other possibilities I can see. There's no one down in Fresno that's doing well enough. I mean, it's just – he's the only option right now. And I think they're just going to play out the string and hope that he gets hot. And the Giants are 10 games above 500, best record in the NL. My God, when he gets hot, if he does,
yeah,
just think of what the lineup's going to do.
Exactly. If you move him down, bonus, so if baby. You've got if you it, when you get Belt back and you got, you know, you got Belt hitting second again, and like let's say you go Pence, Posey, Morse or something like that, mm-hmm. right? And then you put Pablo six, then who cares, right? Like whatever, man, do your thing. It's fine. It's not going to be as big of a deal. And then if he does get hot and he's our six hitter, it's like holy crap, we got power all the way up to six, and that's a really good place to be. So I right now to me it's the biggest question that I can put out there on TorchCast, but it's like it's fine. We're doing well enough. It's fine. All good. Yeah. All right, we're gonna skip tweet at me, Brax. We got nothing, so we're gonna move right into our favorite guys here. I'll go ahead and start because I've been really impressed with this guy. And, you know, we talked a lot about him at the beginning of the season because we were so excited to have this guy playing left field for us. Now he's going to be playing first base probably quite a bit. But that's, you know, he is a first baseman, really. I mean, that's if you could ideally put Michael Moore somewhere on the field, you'd play him first base, right? I mean, the fact is we got Brandon Belt there, so... he is a converted first baseman, isn't he?
He came up as a utility player as a backup, but he's played a lot of first base. 131 games, I believe, in the major leagues he's actually played at first base. So he has almost a full season under his belt.
He just seems to me like a first baseman.
I didn't mean
because
that as a
just
pun,
his,
by the way.
Yeah. his body type and his speed and his power just seems to scream first baseman.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's fine to have him play over there a lot. I think it'll be great for us. But the guy has been a joy to watch hit because when he gets his cheeks into it, he just hits the crap out of the ball. I mean, tape measure shots.
You know, he on Home Run Tracker on ESPN, he still leads with the highest or the longest average home run out of all major league players. I mean, that's the thing. He doesn't hit these things these balls that are scraping the fence.
No.
I mean, he's hitting moonshots.
He's getting all of them, and he's hitting above what I think any of us expected. And I don't think he's going to stay around 273. I think he's going to drop down to more around the 250, 240 range.
Fully.
But
that's the kind of hitter he is.
Whatever. We'll
take 25 home runs for that.
Exactly. We don't care. He's already got 8 home runs and 24 RBIs, and like we said, we're a quarter through the season. So if he sticks with that pace, we're looking at a really solid season out of Morris. I'm just really enjoying watching this guy become a part of the Giants. And we've had this experience a few times now with other players like Pence. You know, Pence came in, just immediately was a big part of the Giants and a big part of the chemistry. And I think Morris has really fit into that role as well. Pagan the same way, you know, came in and immediately was a big part of the chemistry and a big part of the team. Really, really got behind all his teammates. And Morris has done that as well. I mean, you saw... what was it, the Machi bunt the other day? The Machi sacrifice bunt that turned into a single.
Yeah.
And Morris was going crazy in the dugout and he almost like fell over the railing. So
he started to fall over the railing. That's right.
Just watching this guy just enjoy being a Giant is just great as a fan and as somebody who like, you know, covers the team. It's really fun to watch this guy really get into being a Giant. And, it makes you as a fan like really appreciate the team you've got that you get to watch these guys really enjoy being on a baseball team.
They were showing some replays tonight of him greeting Tyler Colvin after the home run, and he was just teasing him, showing how to do his, you know, shake and all sorts of stuff. I mean, the guy really has fit into this culture so well in the Giants. He's like a big teddy bear, and he's been quoted as saying this is absolutely the best clubhouse he's ever been in. And it's only a quarter of the season, you know. I mean, he's eating it up. And so he's absolutely a perfect fit for the Giants. And by the way, they just did close it out 4-2 against the Braves. So here we go, 11 games above 500 in first place.
Crazy. Good stuff, man. All right, Chad, what's your new favorite guy?
All right, so Brandon Hicks. I mean, who would have thought that Marco Scudero, you know, would have been out this long, first of all. He's going to be out for, like you said, at least another 60 days. We were thinking Adrianza and
yeah, you know, we weren't talking Arias. About Brandon Hicks. I mean, we mentioned him, but mentioned mostly him. Because his name is Brandon. I mean, let's be honest,
right?
Because
we love the Brandon to Brandon to Brandon double play, which by the way now can't happen for 6 weeks.
That's true,
which sucks. But he was absolutely off the radar. We thought he was going to be the lowest on the pecking order here. We thought Arias was going to take the lion's share with a little bit of Adrianza mixed in. But man, he has really stepped up. I know he's only hitting 200 or 190 or whatever it is right now. But we will take a second baseman. He's hitting 200. We will take a second baseman who's hitting 7 home runs at this point in the season. I mean, he's on pace for 28, 30 home runs. I know he's not going to end up there. But the point being, he's absolutely won a couple of games with just his bat. I mean, the Dodger game, the last Dodger game, he's the one who put us ahead 2-1 right there. There's been a couple of games where he's had very timely home runs. Tonight he had a single to get in the to knock in the fourth run there. So he's absolutely my favorite guy. Came out of left field, and I just fully did not expect it. I know he's a seasoned veteran. He's had time with Oakland and other teams and what have you. So he's been in the major leagues. But I think some of that seasoning and that experience is showing through. And I don't care. I mean, as long as he hits, you know, maybe around 230, 240 for the season, I'd be happy with that. If he's hitting 20 bombs for the Giants with Skid Row out, that kind of makes up for, I'd say, the clutch hitting that Skid Row
brings,
offers. I would still take Skid Row any day. Don't get me wrong.
No,
a 300-hitting, clutch-hitting second baseman is going to be better than a 200-hitting, power-hitting second baseman. But at the same time, it's better than Adrianza and Arias at this point. So
no, absolutely.
He's my new favorite guy.
Not only that, but his defense has been really, really good. And he's just been solid there at second base. He's made a lot of really great plays. And I think right now he's like 3 or 2 errors. It's like, it's serviceable to above average right now. And you plug that guy in and he does the job. And that's, you need players like that throughout 162 games. You need a guy who can come in, fill a hole and fill it well, and he's absolutely done that. So good pick for sure. All right, time to hate on some people. We're not hating on people today, unfortunately.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
We chose entities.
But I just want to bring this up. Okay, I'm not opposed to the expanded replay or replay at all is really what it is. They call it expanded replay. It's just replay, period. But, man, that Pirates game was sad. I don't know. I don't know if you were watching it live, but anybody who missed it, the Pirates in the ninth inning, bottom of the ninth inning, guy hits a triple, error. They wave him around after the error. The throw beats him by a mile, but Posey's tag is not quite perfect. And after they go to replay, and I think it took like 4 minutes or so, gets called safe, and that's a walk-off for the Pirates. And just moments like that just make you hate replay. And the Giants have been stung by it so far. And we've also had tonight there was a play at third base on a stolen base where it got overturned and the Giants got the out that they were supposed to get on a bad call. But a call like this just really hurts, you know. And there's a certain magic around baseball that is lost when the umpire's call is not final. And I'm not saying that I'm against replay, but the excitement of like, he's out or he's safe is a little bit lost when you go, well, but now we go to replay and check it out, right? I mean, do you feel that with me or am I alone on this one?
No, you're not alone. It's funny. I think if I were to choose, I mean, if a gun was to my head, would you want replay or not? I would still take replay.
Yeah.
But man, it really, really completely... It's distasteful when, like you said, here we go. We have a walk-off play, potential at the plate. Fires home. You're out, you know. Giants celebrate. We go to extra innings. Or the exact opposite. He's safe. Pirates win. They walk off. Big celebration. But now it's neutered completely.
Yeah. Called him safe and then went back and then called him out instead. Like, you got, you know, 40,000 fans who like went wild and now have to be like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I didn't get to go wild. Like there's that certain element of baseball is a little lost.
Yeah. And baseball's always been kind of more that organic sport, right? It's been more true to
its roots.
You got
the umpire calling balls and strikes. I mean, there's so many ways that the umpire affects the outcome of the game as compared to other sports.
Yeah, all sports have the human element, but I think baseball has more of a human element than any other sport by far.
Yeah.
And they've reduced that a little bit here. And so for the purists, I think, you know, they hate this. I'm not a purist, but I do love the tradition of baseball. I love the idiosyncrasies of it. I like the color of the game. And this does reduce that color. But it's in lieu of getting the call right. Because
no, I understand. It's in lieu of making sure that the correct outcome is what the correct outcome is the outcome.
Because you have playoff games, World Series, you have perfect games, no hitters, those kinds of situations where, you know, like the Galarraga perfect game, whatever, 10 years ago.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Jim Joyce.
That was brutal, yeah.
I mean, you know, if replay was there, it would have been overturned, he would have had a perfect game.
Yeah, Kane's little things like that. Would have been the 23rd, not the 22nd. I understand that.
But I know, and it sucks because there's no getting around it. When it's a play like that at the end of the game, there's just no getting around it. If they think that they can overturn it, they're going to challenge it, and you got to wait with bated breath. But I guess it's no different. They've just kind of ushered themselves into the era of the NFL and even the NBA and other in hockey. You know, they have their replays too with pucks going across the line and what have you, where you have these games in the NFL where it's a potentially game-winning touchdown and they got to go. All scoring plays are reviewed now, right? So they got to go to the booth and they got to see if both feet were down. They got to see.
It's just that moment of excitement of like you would watch like in the 70s, right? Where
totally
some guy would catch it in the end zone, and then you see the umpire's hands go up, and you go, "Oh my god, it is a touchdown!" And that's it. It's a touchdown.
It's done.
And you know it's time to rejoice. That's it. But now in the NFL, anytime there's a touchdown, you go, "Okay, we got to wait and see if it actually is." I mean, you still get excited, but there's like a little less excitement. And
I think we've gotten used to it, though. You know what I mean? I think we've gotten used to NFL replay because it's been in for so long now. And this is the first year for baseball.
Yeah, replay has been around, but the all scoring plays has only been around for a few years.
That's only a few years.
Yeah. But I think if baseball does do replay, they need to really go all the way or not at all. And they really need to do every scoring play. And the problem there is that, you end up with this kind of, all right, now we got to wait a second and find out if it's really time to celebrate or not. And that's a little, it's fine. And it's not going to make me like not a fan of baseball, but it is definitely going to take away a little bit of that magic and excitement of those moments. You know
I kind of feel for the umpires because now there are statistics kept on how many calls they have overturned.
Oh, they get right and wrong. Yeah. Right? No,
and
totally.
And especially if you're the umpire, the crew chief that's going to the booth, right? Putting the headphones on and some schmuck back in New York is reviewing. And, you know, they come back and overturn your call. And you have to walk back out on the field and say the opposite of what you called. You just kind of go, yeah, God damn it, I was wrong, safe. Yeah. You know?
It's kind of brutal, man.
It's brutal, but, you know, in a way, maybe that's going to keep the umpires a little bit more honest. You know, I don't know if that can really, because it's a human element. That's not like they're trying to not be honest in the first place.
No, they're trying the hardest that they can. So, like, in the end, it's like, how much harder can they try? Like, I don't know. It might make them.
They can't.
No, I don't think that they can. I think that in the end, like, they're doing the very best that they can anyway.
Yeah.
There's some umpires who do a little better than others, but it's just, it's an embarrassing moment for the umpire. And it's almost like a cringeworthy moment for the fan when they're like, ooh, now you got to say you were wrong right now in front of all of us. And we're going to cheer when you tell us that you were wrong. So I don't know. Right now, I'm just not a big fan of it.
Yeah, I get it.
But I'm sure at some point the Giants will win a game because of extended replay.
It's gonna
and
come,
it will be my new favorite guy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that guy in New York. Yeah. Give the Giants the win tonight.
Who is that
Got
guy?
Got it right, baby. Him.
I really like the guy whose job it is just to bring out the little headsets and just stand there awkwardly while the umpires
he's wearing
listen.
His like, little red vest or whatever.
He has nothing to do.
That's all
he's
he does.
He's standing there
Here,
holding
take
them.
This.
Do they really need a guy to come out like that? I mean, I understand it's like an expedited process to have him come out. Like in the NBA, they got to walk over to the monitor and they put the headphones on, and they look at it, and
The NFL, they review their own plays. It's kind of interesting that baseball actually, if you are going to have replay, I think the way baseball's done it is the right way to do it.
I do. I like it. I like the fact that it's taken out of the hands of the guy who made the call.
Immediately they got this crew in New York. You know, they probably, I don't even know. I mean, I'm sure there's an article somewhere describing the entire process. I'm sure it's not just one guy watching all the games. It's probably one guy or two guys watching every game or assigned to every game.
Yeah.
And so they're just.
And they get the call in.
They literally sit and watch the game. They probably see the damn play live. Then they get the call and they're immediately on the replay. And that's why these things are coming back in like 60 seconds.
You know what it is? It's MLB Fan Cave. That's what it is. That's who they're calling.
Some drunk 22-year-old yeah. going, yeah,
some guy who wants to be a comedian and is a baseball fan as well. Is yeah.
Exactly. I would like to be one of those guys. I'm not the Fan Cave guys, although that would be cool. But one of the replay guys. I mean, you're probably sitting there with your cup of coffee, just you're watching baseball.
Watching
you
baseball.
Pay for that, man.
All day long. Amazing.
You see a couple of replays, a couple of angles. You're like, yeah, he was out. Yeah, he was yep. safe. And he's going, yeah. oh, I you know, I'm not that. So sure about that one, so I'm going to play it safe and just say, Inconclusive.
Play stands. So play stands. Yeah. No, I mean, it can't be that hard of a job, honestly. I could tell you if the guy was out or not. I
like think
you.
About the official scorekeepers. You know, they're assigned by Major League Baseball, but you know that one guy in Texas with Yu Darvish, right?
Yeah.
David Ortiz hits that blooper in the right field, and you get the second baseman and Alex Rios coming in from right field, and they both kind of look at each other, and the ball drops, and he calls it an error, and it's like suddenly in the little baseball sabermetric stat community, this huge uproar, this huge debate on like, well, it shouldn't be an error because it wasn't touched. And other people are like, well, no, if you get a ground ball through your legs, you don't touch it, but you still call that an error.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
you can't, like, that's the thing about the official score is they have a much more subtle job. It's like, you can't say for sure that not touching it is always not an error. Or if you touched it and didn't catch it, it was an error, because I've seen plenty of times hits their glove, but it's not an error because the other day in the Giants game, I can't remember who it was playing left field, but he lost the ball in the lights and basically put his hand up at the last second just to avoid the ball hitting him in the face.
Yeah.
And that's not an error. It's a hit. Because
that's not. Yeah.
It's not that he couldn't catch the ball. It's that he couldn't see the ball. So it's a hit. So, yeah, that's a much more subtle kind of art, you know, to being an official scorer. This is more just
fun stuff.
Yeah, there you go. He's safe. He's out. Whatever. Anyway, what's your let's hate on some more people here.
All right. I know we don't want to get into specifics, but MLB Advanced Media. I'll just leave it at that.
All right.
I just think what they're doing is it doesn't make any sense. It's not going to increase profits. It's not going. It literally doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
Period.
Nope. That's it. That's just all we need to know.
Man being the man.
It's frivolous. It's lame. It's it's just uncalled for. Doesn't need to happen.
Nope.
Nobody needs to be going through this right now. All right. Why will we win it all? I think we both might have the same answer this time, because the answer is obvious. And it's the bullpen.
And we talked about it, yeah.
It's the bullpen. The Giants right now, all they need to get out of their starters is a lead in the sixth or seventh inning. And the starters and the offense need to get us more runs than the other guy by the seventh inning. It's almost like the Padres a few years ago, where it's like, okay, as long as we get a lead at some point, like, you can almost go, cool, let's go to the bullpen. Like, good to go. We'll win this game now. We'll just go zeros from here on out. Doesn't even matter. It's a beautiful way to manage a baseball game, I'm sure, for Bruce Bochy, where it's like, hey, it's a seven inning ball game. Are we winning or losing by seven? If we're winning, we win. If we're losing, we might still win. Like, it's cool. It's a good way to be.
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen, every single member of that pen has been so nails this year. Bochy at this point really can't go wrong with whomever he chooses. He knows that Lopez is his lefty specialist with Affelt. He knows that Casilla is a setup man. He knows that Romo is his closer. Those are the easy ones to pick, right?
Yeah. Well, also, like, I need a ground ball. Affelt's the guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like he's got all the tools in the tool shed right now, you know?
Yeah, he's like, you know, do I need a pair of scissors? Do I need a 5/8 wrench? Do I need a whatever? I mean, he just picks the tool that fits the job, and it's just reliable. It's a reliable tool.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just, oh, do I need a guy who can throw 96, 97? Hey, Gutierrez.
Gutierrez. Right,
check that guy in there. Yeah. It's really, really cool to watch him kind of masterfully manage this bullpen, but it really does. It shortens the game for the Giants. And we also know, as the Giants have proven this year, that we have the offensive capability to come back late in games. So it's like, we can't lose games late in the game, and we can win games. So that's going to turn into a lot of extra wins at the end of the year if that's how it continues. It's cool. It's great. Yeah. And I was envious of the Padres that year until they collapsed at the end. But then I was happy with that situation. But you remember what the Padres had there. They had like four closers in a row, and you couldn't hit any of them. And it was so infuriating to, like, be losing to the Padres in the sixth inning because you're like, damn it, now we can't come back, you know? And that's how teams must feel against the Giants right now. Like, now we can't come back.
Well, they got a 2.10 ERA for the bullpen. They got Machi at .49, Cassie at .81, Lopez at .135, although he did give up a home run tonight, so I think that went up a little bit. Yeah. FL at .138, Romo at .260. I mean, it's Gutierrez is at .4, but that's because I think his very first appearance of the season,
he had like
he got
one
bombed.
Bad outing.
Yeah, it's one bad outing. So, yeah. But since then he's been nails.
And then Petita's your guy who actually has to go out and throw like four or five innings. So his ERA is kind of it's like blowout game. So it doesn't.
He's not that serviceable guy, right?
You know, need the innings. Out of this guy. Yeah, the
and he had that one amazing start so far this year. But
yeah,
so he's contributed as well. He's got a couple of wins. And aside from the bullpen, I know we didn't talk about him all night. I just got to throw a shout out to Tim Hudson. This guy has just I what the hell.
Yeah.
I mean, he's absolutely by
far. He's got the best ERA of all the starters right now.
Their ace right now. Yeah, I mean, he's not even close.
No.
209 ERA. Well, Bumgarner's
a 283, which is really nice.
But, oh, no, yeah. It's really nice. But you know what? Teams are hitting 272 off of him.
It's true.
Right? Yeah. And his whip's 1.4. Hudson's whip is almost half of that. It's .81.
Yeah.
And they're hitting 206 off of him.
And he was really unfortunate.
Has, like, there's no base runners.
The game that he one of his losses is the Pirates game that was really lost on that error.
And that was a complete game too.
Yeah, exactly. That was him in the ninth inning. So I mean that's like another one where it's 1-1 and it's
4-2.
He
could be 6-1 right now. I mean,
it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him,
I also want to point out Casilla to all the people who consistently come up with like weird reasons why they don't trust this guy. How many times does a guy have to have a sub-2 ERA for a season before people trust this guy?
He's got like a 2-3 ERA with the Giants, and yet, his career with the Giants over like 4 years, and yet people are like, they remember a couple of blown saves.
They remember like a 3-week stretch where he had to be a closer.
That's exactly what they remember. They remember him being a closer, stepping in for Brian Wilson, and he had a couple of he had a blister on the thumb. I don't know what it was, but
he was fighting through a tough injury for a pitcher. You can't pitch with a blister. Like Matt Cain had a cut on his finger and was out for like 2 weeks. Like that's how it is for pitchers.
And then he flipped everybody off.
Yeah, that's right. That was beautiful, by the way.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you can't as a pitcher. You can't throw with something on your throwing hand. You just can't do it.
I do not understand the Casilla haters. I really don't.
I don't get it. I do not get it. Every time somebody comes at me and talks about, man, Casilla coming in. No, I'm like,
just go scoreboard.
Really?
Scoreboard.
I'm like, dude, yes. Yes, please. this is the guy we want right now.
George Contos, no.
Yeah, Casilla, George Contos, yes. No. I get it. Yeah. it's insane to me, but whatever. It's fine. You know, I know the truth. You know the truth. Whatever. They can think what they want.
All right.
Well, the numbers speak for themselves. That is episode 61. The Levon Hernandez episode.
Oh,
by the way.
Levo, baby.
Oh, Levo, man. Yeah. You remember him hitting bombs and everything?
Oh,
and,
man. Absolutely.
Like always, he always threw like 240 innings. Yeah, he was Donnie Robinson. He was the caveman. He was the modern day caveman, and just a Cuban body, you know. But
a little extra pulled pork in his system.
Unfortunately, he left the Giants with a little bit of a sour taste in their mouths about him. But it's fine. I think he was a good Giant overall. That'll do it for the TorchCast episode 61. I want to thank Chad King for being here. For the absent Ben Lee, I want to make sure everybody knows where to check us out. Follow us on Twitter. Individually, we are at ChadK21 for Chad, at Fried Duck for Ben, and I am at Willie Dills. And collectively, we are at TortureCast. We're always tweeting out about the Giants. You can find us on Facebook and like us there. You can find us on YouTube. You can find us on TortureCast.com, and that's where we have the blog as well as all the episodes go up there and stuff. So make sure to find us in all those places and get at us. You know, we'll be going to some more games this season. So if you want to hang out, feel free to let us know when you're going to be there. And hopefully we'll be there at the same time as you. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Episode 61 is in the books. See you later. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.